Here we go. Here we go. Just vanishes. Our producer just vanishes at the start.
As quickly as he appeared, he vanishes back into the night from whence he came.
And what manifests in his place? Well, that's us. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. If we sound a little on edge this week, we do apologize. Every podcast that's come before us has died at 54 episodes old. That's a little known fact. So we'll see how this goes. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Also with us today is our favorite super producer and travel buddy, Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. And that's Stoop Kids, a kids with a podcast. Thank you for spelling a Hey Arnold Stoop Kids. Also with us today, listening with a Z. Also with us today is a very special guest who when did we have him? We last had him back a bit over a month ago. He's apparently gunning for residency here at Stoop Kids Studios. So please welcome back to the show, Drew Tenenbaum. Drew, how you doing?
Wow, thanks so much. I'm doing really great. Even better now that I get to talk to you guys. Has it really been a month? It doesn't feel like it. Feels like it was, I feel like I just recorded this last episode, and I guess that's a good thing because it sticks fresh in my mind.
Drew, that's how I feel all the time, my man.
I also, when we were watching these episodes, I was like, are these like half as long as the episodes that we watched for the previous episode I recorded for this? And the answer was nope. Anyway, great to be back.
Time is a flat circle. I think Gerald said that in a previous episode, but all that is to say, today we're here to talk about episode 54 of Hey Arnold, and for those of you keeping track at home, that is season 3, episode 14, going by production code order, and we're going to start with episode 54A, which is called Grandpa's Birthday. Original air date, November 9th, 1998. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Grandpa thinks he's going to die when he turns 81 because of a quote-unquote family curse. Every family member before him died at 81. He and Arnold spend the day before his 81st birthday doing all the things Grandpa has always wanted to do. And as we always do, shouting out the folks who made this episode possible, we've got a bit of a murderer's row situation here this week. Co-directing, we've got Shrem Cohen and Steve Saki, and the three-headed monster we've got in the writer's chairs for this episode. We have Joe and Solibear, Craig Bartlett, and Steve Vixton, the heavy hitters coming out to play this week, folks. You really do love to see it. And I'm curious to hear from Harry how all of this hits him. You know, we're fresh off of the episode watch. Harry, how you feeling about Grandpa's birthday?
Hey, thanks, Cody. I think we talked about this with Drew before the episode started, but this is definitely like one of the most immediately memorable episodes of Hey Arnold. Like, I remember this one immediately. It's one of the maybe like top 10 I think about when I think about Hey Arnold, especially before I started this podcast. That last scene where he's dying in his bed, apparently, except that he's not, obviously, is just really iconic for some reason. I just always think back to that. I think that first and foremost, this is a really interesting, like, clear showcase of Dan Castellaneta. Like, they maybe smartly knew what they had in the literal voice of Homer Simpson, and they just really wanted to give him extremely funny things to say. And so, like, first and foremost, it completely works on that level, right? Like, I think that Grandpa is like one of my favorite characters on this show, maybe one of my favorite characters in general. And there's no better showcase maybe except for this episode of that, right? Of the reasons why. Like, he's so funny. He's so dynamic. The irony of this episode that follows him around, where he's, as he says later on, strong as an ox, and continues to be sort of like incredibly physically active for an 81-year-old man, all the while mentioning how frail and meek and weak he's become. It works every single time. It's really fun to see the borders in this episode. And I think it's a really good Arnold Grandpa episode, right? Because I think it illustrates a lot of the things that we've used Grandpa for in the past on this show. Drew and I, we talked about this a little bit beforehand, but Grandpa is always comically misunderstanding the point of the moral of the story as it occurs to him, right? Like, by the end of this episode, he finds out that he's going to be dead at 91, not 81, so he's got a decade left, but he still believes in the, like, hard deterministic family curse, sort of like completely missing the point of everything that just happened to him, right? But now he's on top of the world because he thinks he's got 10 years to go. I really love that for a lot of reasons we've talked about, right? I love that Grandpa is a fallible character. He's not a traditional mentor to Arnold. He's much more like a friend and confidant and sort of like on Arnold's level, or in a non-traditional way, right? Like, I don't think that this character would work as a dad, right? Like, I think that it really makes sense that he's one degree removed and much older and more fun and wiser and just non-traditional in those ways really works. And I think it really works here too, because I really love Arnold's interactions with Grandpa across this episode, how he clearly values Grandpa so much. We even get to see he and Miriam interact, which is kind of a rarity, to be honest. But really, really welcome. And by the end of this episode, I come away with such a great understanding of like how all of the elements of Arnold's life came together to create him, right? Like Grandpa is so clearly like this force for good in Arnold's life, and interacting with Grandpa the way he has and almost sort of parenting his grandparents has helped make Arnold into this very caring, almost like precociously mature and level-headed individual. And I really love that. I really love that, like, we make room for the idea that, like, Grandpa is this funny, offbeat, fallible individual, and so is Grandma, right? But, like, it's exactly those idiosyncrasies that made Arnold as special as he is, right? So it's like a real triumph for non-traditional families and non-traditional living situations in a way that I really like. And, you know, like I had said, I think above all of that high-minded stuff, it's just a really, really funny episode. There are just so many lines that had me losing it. But I'm very interested to hear what everybody else has to say as well.
Yeah, as am I, in this sort of non-traditional family of our own. Aw, get it? A really good segue on my part. I'm patting myself in the back. Emily, what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, thanks for asking, fam. I want to first off say happy birthday, Grandpa, and agree with Harry that he's like one of my favorite characters I've ever seen in a show. Certainly one of my favorite characters in this show, but he's just so hilarious, so good. Harry did a great job of already describing all of that. I think that his lines, especially in this episode, are hilarious, and we're having all of us in the watch party just like LMAOing a lot. I tried not to swear there. But yeah, I think this episode, to come at it from like Arnold's lens, I think this is a really interesting and challenging thing for him to deal with, to struggle with, because he's not just like trying to show someone the bright side of life or turn a positive spin on someone's perspective, but he's literally trying to like shake his grandfather out of like the grave haze that he's in, thinking that Grandpa alone knows this exact moment that he's just done for and gonna die. The second that the clock strikes midnight, that's when Grandpa's done. And Arnold has to spend the whole episode being like, first of all, like, no, you're obviously wrong. Like, everyone knows Grandpa's obviously wrong. He's strong as an ox and everything. When he's doing pull-ups and running on the treadmill and boxing in the doctor's office and going, oh, I'm knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. And he's just like clearly so strong and so with it, so sharp. And like part of his sharpness is his humor. He's like obviously so witty and great, totally with it in there in a way that grandma is more on the kookier side of that as far as being with it goes. But yeah, I think it's just interesting that they have Arnold really grappling with this like challenge in a way he hasn't with other characters. And it's such a big thing too, because he's a little kid. Arnold's a fourth grader, and he's trying to say, "Grandpa, no, this isn't the end for you. Don't die. You're not gonna die. And also, like, let's have fun, and let me show you that, like, you're clearly not about to just like croak." So Arnold's stress level is high, I think, and totally valid here. And it was making me think a lot too of Arnold, the character, being this parentless young boy who just has grown up with his grandparents. So losing, like, the idea of losing grandpa, even if it's just in the sense of like grandpa thinks that he's going away or losing it, is like, that is tough for that kid to deal with. So yeah, grandpa's the best character. I love him here. I do remember the last scene that Drew pointed out, where the candle goes out and they're all expecting grandpa to just die at the instant of midnight or not. Yeah. And so that has stuck with me since I was a kid, like the stressfulness of this episode. Also think there's some great cowboy type moments with grandma and the Pookie and grandpa having some back and forths that are wonderful to see. And I guess I'll just leave it at, I really like when grandpa is laying on the bed and talking to everyone and like, okay, bye everybody. Unfortunately for me, I have to face this music. And it's Pookie playing a really strange song on the piano. It's just so funny for as grave of an episode as it also is and stressful. But yeah, I want to hear everyone else's thoughts.
Yeah, really well characterized, Emily, as the listeners, as Emily was kind of replaying those moments. I couldn't help but laugh on my side. You know, we're all having a good time despite the graveness of this episode, like Emily was saying, but it cannot be understated how much we were laughing our fucking fucks off in the group chat of the watch party. And now I will turn to our very special guest, Drew. Drew, how did this episode hit you?
This episode is one of the most memorable ones from the series for me. Like, as Harry said, like, we were talking about it before we recorded Inside Baseball. I know, I'm sorry. But we just remember specifically the scene at the end, right? Like, that's something that has stuck with me. And I hadn't really thought, even when watching the episode, I hadn't thought of the points that Emily was making about how it's almost an episode about Arnold grieving, right? Like, it's a pre-grieving, right? Like, he knows that grandpa's not dying now, but like he does have to come to terms with the fact that it is happening not that far in the future, right? Like, not like, right? So I didn't think of those parts of the episode at all, right? Like, I saw this as sort of a grandpa-centric episode, and it was really interesting to hear that, you know, Arnold actually does have quite a role to play, and, you know, could even be more of a main character here. From my perspective, it was Grandpa's episode, right? We saw so many lines from him. We saw so much character from him. And secondarily, if it's not a Grandpa episode, it's an ensemble episode, right? We see almost every character in the boarding house more than once. You know, I thought it was going to be just that opening scene, and then I remembered, oh yeah, they got the betting pool right there. You know, they're around, and it's really great to see ensemble scenes like that. Like, I think we see a lot of ensemble scenes from the kids at the school, but we don't see a lot from the boarders as often, right? We get individual episodes from them or specific interactions, at least from what I've seen recently. But for me, I want to talk about the actual lesson in the show, because I think it's really interesting the way that it's presented, right? So I think the lesson is sort of live in the moment, right? Like, don't have anxiety about the future. Don't feel like your future is written or predetermined, right? Like, live in the moment, you know, stay in the present and try to get the best out of your life as you can. And what's interesting is at the end of the episode, Grandpa completely misses it, right? Like, he still believes in the curse. Like, he's just putting it off another 10 years, like Harry said. But interestingly enough, that might just be what he's saying, right? Like, Arnold got him to live the truth of the moral, right? He got Grandpa to live in the moment, right? Like, he did all the things that he wanted to do with his grandpa. And so whether or not Grandpa like believed it with his thoughts, he like believes it with his actions. And that's maybe like the first step to like overcoming that. I think the one place that this episode made a misstep is that like, we didn't hear enough about the curse. Listen, I like a good curse. We all like a good curse. And they didn't even go into the lore. How does the curse work? Why did the family get cursed? Like, is there a way to break the curse or escape the curse? Like, what are the mechanisms that lead to the death? Like, come on. Like, you didn't tell us any of that?
And yeah, like, I'm trying to hear about Grandpa's great-great-great-grandfather, Stanley Yelnats, up
yeah,
in here.
Thank you. Yes, right. Like, I want the lore behind the curse. And it just wasn't there. And nobody even believed the curse. No one was like, ooh, Grandpa, oh my God, you might be right. There is a curse. Look at all these people who died. Like, let's figure out about the curse. No, and they just like, they decided to go down the interpersonal boring stuff. Boring. And I'm putting air quotes because it's not actually boring, but give me the curse. I want the curse. Yeah, what's up, Cody?
Hey, no, a curse? Hey, more on the curse would have been really, really nice. I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, I would like some Stanley Yelnats action in my Harold episode. The discussion about like the lesson or the takeaway that we get from this episode is, I think, genuinely fascinating. And I'm going to take a different like roundabout way of getting there. I think I will circle back to it eventually, as long as I don't get lost in my own brain. But you know, I got thinking, you know, I was looking in the show credits and, you know, doing the bare minimum, like pre-episode research, as I always do. And I saw that three-headed monster being and Solibear, Bartlett, and Vixen in the writer's chairs. And I thought, like, before we hopped on the group watch, I was like, why did they need that? Like, why did these guys need to come back in? Like, Joe and Solibear has not been on an episode like formally with writing credits since Arnold's Christmas. So like, why, like, so that was, that general thought was bouncing around my head, and I got watching, and as I was watching, and as we've sort of been talking about it, I think back to other shows that had an episode like this. And you can pick them out if you just, you know, if you think about them even for a, you know, a couple seconds. In the group chat, we mentioned many different like SpongeBob episodes that draw from this. The first one I thought of was when SpongeBob eats a pie and Squidward thinks SpongeBob's going to die. Like circling around that same, like a similar utility of like dramatic
you,
irony.
Me and this brick wall you built between us.
How did you get a hand on my memoirs and know that that's what I was going to call it? Yeah, so there's that one. The Simpsons, which I haven't watched in a long, long time. I think about One Fish, Two Fish, Blowfish, Bluefish, like a weird amount for a show that, again, I have not watched in years. But that's a similar episode where Homer thinks he's going to die and he gets, spoilers, he gets misdiagnosed. And it's like, these are all episodes that teeter-totter, seesaw back and forth across this very fine line of like hokey and funny and dramatically ironic. And part of me thought, like, we need the head honchos in to really tighten this up, because if there is not the proper mix of hokey to like grave emotions, this is going to be an all-time bummer episode, and people are going to get really, really sad. And so,
damn, that's a really good point. I never thought about that, but you're so right. Like, it walks a tightrope, doesn't it? Emily
right.
talked about that too.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that kind of gets me back to like, what do I take away from it? And it's like, more than anything, I feel like I take away of like a feeling, like the fact that they were like, if we want to create a binary of like these two feelings of, it's like, hey, we're having fun and living life, and in equal parts we're grieving and like celebrating life that is not being lived any longer. And just like, you know, at the end of the day, okay, oh well, I've got 10 more years, I'm gonna like choose to operate on this side of the binary a little bit longer. But like at the end of the episode, we did both of those things, and I don't know, experiencing both of those emotions is okay, and it's great. And like, you look back at these episodes and they're so well remembered, like, right. We rattle them off by the dozen. So I don't know if that gets to anything you were thinking about, Drew, but yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
It really does. Cause when you were talking about the episode where SpongeBob eats the pie, like I hadn't thought of that one specifically, but now that you mention it, it is, it's in line with that episode and the episode of Arthur where Binky eats the green potato chip and thinks he's going to die. And so he starts to live more like as his true self, right? Like he does the ballet in front of the entire town because he's like, well, what do I have left to lose? And like, it's totally a carpe diem type of thing, but like it can be really morbid, right? Like, and walking the line between kooky and morbid is like totally what this episode does. And I don't know if it ever quite reaches touching, right? Like, I feel like it does lay itself quite firmly in the kooky if you had to choose on like a scale, but like it's close, right? Like, you, if you read into it and you look at it, like, you see that it's touching.
Yeah, I don't want to go too deep into the sort of like Grandpa's Gambit, hashtag Grandpa's Gambit theory that Drew brought up. It is something that when I was very into my AP English class in high school, I was fully like, oh, Grandpa made up the story about Arnold's parents, like to instill Arnold with the sort of sense of morality that he had. And so like this is a very modernist idea about how like these dreams that are not real can still affect real change and do real things. And I was like, it's about America and it's about all. Anyway, I don't think that's actually the case, right? But like it's really interesting how that comes into play here. And I think that and not to give the show too much credit, but I really find that kooky to serious binary and where it ultimately falls is really a feature of this episode. Because after Emily brought up her great points, I kept thinking about how strange it is that this is Arnold's job, right? Like that there is now a sense that death is going to happen in their home. And this is how Arnold is processing it, right? This is how he has to process it. This is sort of like how he assumes this role is he becomes who Arnold is, right? Like, he's a mediator and he's a counselor and he's the person who tries to make everything okay and bring everybody back. And it's so fascinating that like that might be something like that is affected, right? Like, this might be a way that Grandpa and Grandma are trying to help Arnold cope with death, or more to the point and more realistically, it's just how it turns out, right? Like, I don't think it matters necessarily if Grandpa and Grandma mean this to be a sort of like hidden lesson. It's just that is what ultimately is the effect of this, right? Is that like all of this non-traditional mentoring and this apparent dysfunction, right, which we see throughout the episode. We see Grandpa being crabby and angry. We see Pookie celebrating his death in her own way in funny ways. We see how Grandpa's death is going to affect all of the boarders. All of that culminates in this like this great place that all of these people end up in, right? That maybe they wouldn't have ended up in if they were in a more traditional circumstances, right? If Arnold had confronted the grief in a different way, maybe he wouldn't have processed it in this way and come to these conclusions about it, right? And I think that that's really interesting, right? I think there's a really interesting commentary there about like how there are so many different ways to make your way through big life events or just coming of age, and how even non-traditional ones or strange ones can be valid and can in fact sort of affect really good things.
Yeah, I think the scene that really sticks out to me and that warms my heart so much is the wonderful montage scene where Grandpa and Arnold are having the best day ever. They're at the movies, they're at an ice skating rink, they're like on the boardwalk, and then just sitting on the dock with the sunset, and it's beautiful, and they're having like this quality time day with each other. And I feel like that's such a great switcheroo from Grandma's treatment in Field Trip, where they had the same type of like Arnold and Grandma moment for that episode, and the same type of sunset at the end where you're like, wow, these people have like a really great relationship. It's different than other kids have with their grandparents, but we're just seeing like a beautiful family relationship. And but what's so strange then about this one is that it's not just like they're having a wonderful day. It's like Arnold, the little kid, is trying to show his grandpa the last great day of his entire life. And he's a kid. So yeah, I think it's, I like the point too about it's like preparing him in the sense for the grief. But Arnold also as a character, and insofar as we don't know where his parents really are, that isn't like a resolved thing at this point in season three. It is kind of like, well, doesn't this kid, hasn't he grieved like enough probably? Like, isn't he also grappling with enough to then also have to like take his grandpa around town and hope that grandpa understands, like, that he's fine and not about to die, but that it shouldn't be a place that a little kid is ever in. It's just, like, certainly adds to, like, the kookiness, though, that you guys are talking about.
That's such a great point, Emily, and I don't want to get, like, too heavy here, but the next episode is even going to demonstrate this more, right? That, like, the thing about Hey Arnold, and one of the big things I think it's really remembered for, in addition to its often melancholic episodes and its jazz score and the fact that it deals with real sort of inner city issues, is that, like, there is a deep tragedy at the heart of both of the characters that are in this show, right? Like, Arnold's parents are gone and Helga has a broken home, essentially. Like, I don't want to be too bad about it, but it's, she has a lot of dysfunction in her life. And, like, I think that there's something so affecting about the fact that the show takes the tack that it does in terms of displaying that trauma without sort of, like, without exactly directly, like, mentioning how awful it is, by instead demonstrating how these kids continue to have and to even make for themselves, in the case of both Arnold and Helga, really full, rich lives, right? They don't have the opportunity to have the traditional life that a lot of people do, right? Like, they don't have parents who care for them traditionally. They don't have brothers and sisters who they get along with, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, even in the absence of the sort of, like, normative nuclear family unit, they are able to create these great lives and learn these great lessons that help them grow as people and make them into the great characters that we know, right? So, like, it's amazing that, like, the one way of reading the entire show, Hey Arnold, is, like, look at what happened to Helga and Arnold, and, like, they're still Helga and Arnold, right? Like, they're still these characters that you adore and that are such good people, and they're going to be all right, right? Like, there's a really great, in terms of the sort of, like, tools that Craig Bartlett, like, lays out in this show, just that overwhelming optimism of sort of, like, hey, like, if you've had a tough life, it's going to be okay. You're going to find a way to, like, grow out of it. And it's really affecting for that reason, even in kooky, weird episodes like this, I think.
I'm inclined to think you're correct. Well, yeah. Wow, Harry, you really did make that heavy. No, I'm just kidding. A lot of great points from everybody. Thank you a whole bunch. Any other points that folks wanted to get to? Any shout outs? Or, you know, I'll toss out as well. There were a lot of mentions in the chat of just, like, things that have stuck with you all from this episode over the years. So I don't know if any of those fit into your shout outs. I personally would like to hear those.
I have so many notes on this episode. I think it's just a really excellent episode. But one thing, too, I just wanted to make a note of, and I should have opened with this, but I think there is a lot of, like, this episode, as kooky as it is, there is a lot of, like, reality based in it, too. At least insofar as Grandpa, in a lot of ways, reminds me of my pooky like grandma in this episode. Because my grandma, who is super with it, super, like, even young as a grandma, and, like, everything, she'll, like, tell me and my cousins sometimes, like, oh, like, I'm gonna, like, at this age, like, that's it for me, like, just because that's how she wants it to be or something. And it's like, no, we have to be like, no, grandma, like, what, like, that's not gonna happen. And I don't know, so there's something, like, very, very relatable in that way in this episode that I just wanted to mention for all of its kookiness as well. But I think, too, I'd like to shout out just some other good moments I enjoyed. And I want to hear what Drew was about to say, too. But I like Mr. Wynn at the breakfast table when they're sitting there and they're arguing over the flapjacks and stuff. And Oscar is just being annoying and trying to steal the pancakes. And Mr. Wynn's like, the old man can be cranky if he wants to. Mind your business. Which is just an amazing line, an amazing sentiment also. And I like looping that back to at the end when Grandpa realizes he isn't dead at the stroke of midnight, and that, in fact, Oscar is still in the room. So what does that mean? Does that mean I'm in the bad place? As Grandpa realizes out loud, or says out loud. just really good. Also, the song on the Lone Prairie, like, that's just kind of inserted and interwoven throughout the episode, especially with Grandma's cowgirl getup, is great. And I'll just leave one more shout out as far as when Grandma goes, "Howdy, Slim, about time for the last roundup, huh?"
It's good to, honestly, like, I'm glad that you got that in, because it was really good to hear that you had, like, a personal, like personal experience that, like, changed your outlook of, like, how morbid the episode actually was. Like, and since maybe we don't have, like, our grandparents, you know, telling us that they're about to die, like, we don't have that experience, right? Like, we can't be like, oh, wow, actually, this is super heavy. So it's, I'm glad to hear that. I just have a couple of shout outs or things that I couldn't help but think of my pop culture brain tying stuff together. The scene where Grandpa and Arnold are, like, eating the corn dog on the end of the pier, like, that's, like, very similar to the same similar scene where they eat the corn dog on the end of the pier in Princess Diaries, where Julie Andrews has never eaten a corn dog before, and, like, Anne Hathaway's character forces her to eat the corn dog. Very similar. They're sitting on it's sunset, you know, they have a connection. I don't know. I couldn't not see that there when Grandpa's like at his on his deathbed and everyone's sort of watching, but he's like still talking to everybody. That's totally like Tom Sawyer's at his own funeral. Like, it's totally like I was like, yeah, we read that in school. Tom Sawyer, he's at his own funeral. And then finally, I don't know how many times we had to watch this in school, but the Magic School Bus episode where they go to the spooky haunted house and they learned about the sound waves via the magic glasses. Like, I can't not compare that to the scene at the end where Grandma's playing the spooky piano. Those of you who lived in the same time period as me and went to school at the same time who are listening, like, you know exactly what episode I'm talking about and why it's connected here. And Grandpa has a little bit of chest hair that looks like a third eyebrow right on his sternum. That's all I got.
Someone had to say it.
And is Grandpa a gilf? He kind of is.
Harry, do you have any notes, or are we ending on gilf?
No, I would love to end on gilf. Thank you.
Great. Well, we're ending on gilf. On thinking back, I can't recall having a episode discussion like that since I was a lad. I can't do the line reading justice. We've got another episode to talk about, so don't touch that dial. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. It's time for episode 54B, which is called Road Trip. Original air date, November 9th, 1998. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. When Bob has to go to a business meeting, Miriam and Helga are forced to go on the family road trip by themselves to South Dakota to see Helga's grandmother, which results in Miriam losing her purse, the directions, and with her wrecking the car. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Tuck Tucker directed this one, and Jonathan Greenberg wrote it, and also credited with the first round of takes for the episode is, our own Emily. Emily, what'd you think of this episode?
Well, I like how much you threw me off there with handing over the mic. Thank you, Cody. I think this is an excellent episode. Again, both of these A and B are doozies, in my opinion, especially emotionally, like both of them. There's a lot going on. But yeah, so this is a Mother's Day episode, essentially. We start with the class. All the kids are making Mother's Day cards. And the writer set this up really well. I was thinking about, because even if you're a kid who hasn't seen Helga's family, or you've just, maybe this is the first episode you're seeing of the show, you have enough context there at the beginning in the classroom that Miriam's not such a great mom. She forgets to pick up Helga from school and soccer practice all the time. She forgets to put food in her lunchbox, which is a very, very dark little moment there that we hear about. But so we have enough context there to, like, set up, okay, Helga doesn't have a great home life. So this is sad, and let's see what happens here now that they're going to spend the day together. But yeah, I think So apart from that, I'll get back to that in a sec. But I think the episode itself has a lot of really cool animation going on, especially just like the car, as you know, there's the ladybird scene. Shout out Greta Gerwig there, where Helga and her mom are in the car driving on the road trip to South Dakota, I believe you said, Cody. And we have a bunch of other times where they're driving in the car and arguing or whatever. But like when the car flies through the cornfields and you see all of that animation, and then like the mud splatters across the car and there's cows all over the place, and the whole like mechanical bull riding and the desert with the cactuses and cacti rather, and spiky plants. Drew pointed out a really cool part of the animation in the bar, which I'll let him mention if he wants to, but I really like all of that. So it's just like fun and interesting and different, right? To spend a whole episode outside of Hillwood, like so far out of the city that we're just the entire episode, we're with all of these like fun one-off characters, or just like goofy, funny characters, like the guy at the auto shop and the country bar where everyone's got cowboy hats and outfits on, which was reminding me too of another Drew guested episode, the Roughin' It camping trip episode, where we're out in nature. How neat. But yeah, so I think though overall, right, like the lesson of this episode is that you're just supposed to have a little faith in people. And yeah, hey, your Miriam Pataki may not be the best mom, but like Helga, just like try to have a nice time with her. Which I think, I don't know, I think they get there, and it's like, it's nice that they have this moment, and that Helga gets to like learn a little bit more about her mom, and kind of gains like the curiosity about her mom, to be like, oh, you know, yeah, there's maybe a lot of stuff I don't know about her. This is me seeing her in a different light, me seeing her like do things and instead of not doing anything. But to that point too, it's just like Helga still needs more supportive parents, more present parents, sober parents. Miriam is like very much characterized as like a lush. Like she even went to community service in an episode at the start where she was like drunk at the beginning of the episode with her quote unquote smoothies. Like we know enough about like, she's not like a mean mom or abusive necessarily, but she's like very neglectful and just kind of absent-minded parent, which is not what a kid needs. And so that's really unfortunate, and Helga needs better. Any kid needs better than that, but it's like, I think a nice lesson overall is not even just have a little faith in people. I don't think that's my takeaway. It's like, what kind of like nice moment can you share with someone, even if it's like your mom, who you, as Helga and her, they don't relate to each other, they're not similar at all, but like where can they have these like small unexpected moments that brings them closer, or at least helps them like know each other a little bit better. So yeah, I think it's quite a doozy though of an episode, and I'm excited to hear y'all's thoughts too.
For sure. A doozy indeed. And I like that you mentioned that. I mean, this is not an episode that takes place in Hillwood. We're very much on the road. Harry, correct me if I'm wrong. This is part of Wim Wenders' road trilogy, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's I believe it's Alice in the City's Wrong Move, Helga's Road Trip, and then Kings of the Road, if I'm not mistaken. So really a quadrilogy. Yeah. Man, Emily, you characterized that so well. I want to say, first of all, what route did they take to get to North Dakota? Because if Hillwood is in Seattle or in New York, how did they end up in the American South? I don't understand how they dipped. Maybe they got lost, right? So maybe they ended up in Texas somehow. I don't know. I do really legitimately love that, like, road trips are such an iconic idea in the American consciousness, that we just know that what you're talking about is Route 66 and the American South, and so you're going to do things like having like Texas Roadhouse bars and tumbleweeds and cactuses. That was a really funny bit. I really like Emily's characterization. This was an episode that I got mixed up with another episode and didn't really realize until the very end that it wasn't going to be the episode it is. I believe there's another episode where Helga and Miriam are together, and it's revealed that Miriam was actually like a very accomplished person before marrying Bob. And that kind of happens here as well, but not exactly the same. This episode is even better, I think, in the sense that it's really about Helga and Helga's relationship to her mom. And it does this, and it's almost a weird fit for Hey Arnold because of the demographics, right? Like, at one point, Helga does the full Goofy movie thing where she says, like, I'm not a little kid anymore. And it's like, well, Helga's 9 years old. It's like, 9 years old is a little kid, like, straight up. I don't know. Like, I know Helga's precocious, but, like, if a 9 year old said to me, I'm not a little kid, I'd be like, all right, Tyke, let's get you to bed. But I don't have children. I won't have children, so don't worry about that too much, everybody listening. So it ends up doing this really hard thing to do, right? Which is that, like, Helga is experiencing this sort of, like, this dual disillusionment and relief that comes with learning that her mom is a person, right? Like, that her mom is a woman who had a story and had a history and has all of these skills and all of this past and interiority that she had sort of like not ever considered because she was never in a position to consider it, right? And I really like how it doesn't, this episode never disparages Helga for her feelings for her mom. It never suggests that those aren't justified, because as Emily pointed out, they are absolutely justified. But this episode does something really tricky, which is that it finds a way to extend empathy to Miriam, and even for Helga to find a way to extend empathy toward Miriam without justifying Miriam as a character or as a mother, right? And it does. It comes to this very hard conclusion that, like, that is part of what growing up is, right? It's like that East of Eden quote I bring up all the time, but, like, you do have to figure out that your parents were fallible and that they screwed up a lot raising you, and that, like, their screw-ups have informed and will always inform your life. And, like, that's a tough thing to forgive, and it's a tough thing to even understand when you're a kid, because your parents are not people when you're a kid. They're parents, right? Like, they're just a different role. And so, characteristically of Hey Arnold, right, like, this is a very good, very sort of fun, silly episode that is also, like, pretty heavy, I feel. Like, it ends up, especially, like, I really love the first act where, like, they make no bones about Helga and Miriam, like, having a very, very contentious relationship, right? Like, Helga says awful things to Miriam, and it's justified, right? Like, you understand why she feels the way she does. And especially paired with Grandpa's birthday, it's really interesting to see, like, the dark side of dysfunctionality, right? Because it's like, Arnold's home life is so almost idyllic in the sense that, like, it's kooky and it's offbeat, but all of that offbeatness is actually what makes it so special, right? And here it's like, no, like, there is also a dark side to that, right? Like, sometimes your home life is dysfunctional and it's a really bad thing, and it affects you in all sorts of other ways. But ultimately, I think that the episode extends this empathy to Helga, where it finds a path toward that understanding and that empathy. And I think that's just a really important character moment for Helga, right? Because that Helga, or Arnold, has sort of historically been her refuge for those feelings. And it's really promising and exciting to see her open up a little bit, right? And see that, like, underneath the facade, underneath the persona, she is sort of slowly starting to understand and accept other people. It's a wild episode. I mean, like, Emily, you brought up Lady Bird. It, like, it has big Lady Bird vibes, and Lady Bird is a devastating movie. So it's some wild stuff. But I can't wait to hear what everybody else thought as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings us to Drew. Drew, do your parents' mistakes define you? Where do you sit on that? How do you feel about this episode? Whatever you want to throw out there.
Yeah, I love the stuff that has been brought up about, like, your parents and how they treat you define how you navigate the world as a child and then again as an adult, and that never really goes away. And, like, life is just, you know, a healing process where you navigate previous parts of life by living the future parts of life, and the present is like the time knife between the two. Anyway, not what I was thinking of when I went into this discussion, but really, really interesting stuff brought up there. I think this episode is harder to watch than the first one emotionally. Like, it's tough, and it really rewards viewers who have seen these two characters interact throughout the series, perhaps even in incidental ways, because you get to see the evolution and the realization from the perspective of Helga. And what I mean by that is that if, as you watch the series, we see the type of person that Miriam is and the way that she treats and interacts with Helga, and not just Helga, with every aspect of her life, right? Like, we might have an idea about, you know, based on the way that we've seen her, about how smart she is, how skilled she is, how dependable she is in a pinch, right? You know, we have these preconceived notions about how she might act in stressful situations or in situations where she's needed, right? And so in the first act, we're seeing that, you know, sort of mimicked and echoed. But if you haven't seen the rest of the series, right, it's sort of just like you have to sort of take their word for that this is the way that the relationship is. And that still functions, but you don't get this long-standing, this is how she operates. This is the preconceived notion of her. And this episode, to me, the turn happens, right, when Helga actually looks at her mom and sees her with, you know, maintaining her resolve and staying on the ball. Doing something that she knows that she can do for her and her daughter in a moment where she needs to be dependable and reliable. In a moment we thought that she might be operating the exact opposite, you know, Helga having to fend for herself, Helga having to find her own way home or her own sense of money. And that doesn't happen. And like the lesson here is that no matter how strongly you have a picture of the preconceived notion of your parents in your head, those can be broken at any time, because you cannot have perfect information about them, right? Or their lives or their past or even their internal, you know, state. And not only can they come through for you when you think that they wouldn't, they might not come through for you in the way that you think, right? If you think hard enough, their actions might actually always be coming through for you, just in an unexpected way, right? And so it gives you some perspective on, is it, when you see that the actions that your parents take, you should, instead of looking for the ways that they let you down, you should look for the ways that they unexpectedly brought you up or helped you. And like, there's a lot to like love in that moment there. And it's really, I don't want to say it's a full redemption arc for Miriam, but it really, really humanizes a character that has had almost no humanization over the course of the series. And in that case, this is really Miriam's episode, and we get to see Miriam from Helga's perspective, and we get to have the realization at the same time as her. And it's really, really great to feel that.
Agreed. This is by the end of it does feel like a real feel-good episode. And everybody's characterized it really well, this sort of learning who our parents were, who they are, who they could be, if not for the fact that they are our parents. And I, for whatever reason, during just kind of hearing opening thoughts, I was thinking a lot about that while watching the episode. And I also got to thinking about just sort of pulling that out as a whole, just like with grownups in general, from the perspective of children, like thinking back to when we meet Simmons, you know, like thinking about who are our teachers when they're in the classroom, what happens when their will is broken, and we have to like confront those things outside of the classroom. Like, I think this episode with Miriam, you know, this road trip episode works really well as like a standalone episode. Like, if you were to show somebody, hey, watch this show, hey Arnold, here's a great episode from it. I think this episode would work really well for that. But also, like, metatextually, I think this operates really well when you look to Simmons episodes, but also when you look to the episode where Helga has a similar arc with Big Bob, where Miriam has to leave town, and like the settings are entirely different, right? Like, Emily, I think you brought it up, the fact that, right, like we're on the road, we're going so far out of our way to like, Helga's going so far out of her way to connect with Miriam and vice versa. It takes a big, like literal long winding road to like hit that inroad of, oh, now I can learn about who my mother is. And like thinking back to the episode where Helga has that same sort of interaction with Big Bob, the arc is similar, but they're in that same, like, we're recontextualizing the same space that the same house that the Patakis always live in, which isn't to say that it's like a better or worse thing. I just think it further enhances how like distinct and special of an episode this is, where, you know, we are treated to that same sort of Hey Arnold magic, the Bartlett touch, I think, as it's called, as it's referred to in the biz, or I guess who wrote this episode, the Greenberg touch, and the Tuck Tucker special, whatever you want to call those. Those are, you copyright Stoop Kids podcast.
He touches turns to gold.
That's what we're saying. That's what I've been hearing. So yeah, I don't know, Harry, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, I really like that. And I really like what Drew had said about parents unexpectedly coming through. Or even like another nuance that I think this episode really gets at is that, parents just aren't all about you. Right. I think that like that is a very simple realization that strikes every kid at different ages. But at a certain point we realize, right, sort of like I'm so much more than just my parents. Like I have these friends, I have my school, I have my hobbies. Like I don't even really think about my parents that much, right? Or in relation to myself. And then like, but when you're a kid, you're like, but my parents are about me. Right. Like they sort of exist to bring me up and they exist for my life. And then at a certain point you realize, I think like Helga is here, that like in good and bad ways, that isn't true. Right. And like sometimes when Miriam lets down Helga, it's just because of something that's going on with her or something in her life or a skill deficiency that she has. Right. Like I really love that, for instance, Miriam's still a bad driver at the end of this. Right. And it's like, Helga, that has nothing to do with you. It's not your fault. It's not something that you have to be responsible for. It's just something that is true and that makes your relationship with your mom a little bit harder than it could be. And I really think that like getting at that and sort of like finding that humanization, like you had said, Drew, without necessarily justifying it, but just basically by like portraying the existence of a whole person in this way, is a really like poignant way to get that idea across, right? It's like, yes, she has deep flaws. Some of those flaws are directly causing pain to her family members, and she has to accept some blame or some responsibility for that, but that is not the whole story of who she is, right? Like there is so much more going on there, and in the mere fact that there's so much more going on means that we can't dismiss her as one thing in that way, and I really like that element. What do you think, Emily?
Yeah, I think that what y'all are saying and what the episode kind of brings up is something that I heard a therapist say once, which is that they thought parents are just doing the best that they can, but that means that they're just doing the best they can. Maybe the best they can do is not always great in the instance of like a child like Helga. But this episode is kind of drawing up Miriam as a person in that way, as a fully realized person who has her own past and her own history and all these skills and things that we didn't know about, that Helga didn't know about. So since she's kind of the main character of Hey Arnold, we learned it together with her in this episode. But yeah, I think I really like that point that Drew is bringing up, but just like someone like Miriam is maybe, you know, there for you in an unexpected way or in a way you know, lets you down in one way and then is still surprising you in this other way or can help you out or just give you a different perspective maybe. But yeah, I also was looking at the Hey Arnold wiki on this episode and someone commented, I don't know why I was looking at the comments, but someone wrote, "I love this episode because we learn that Miriam is capable of doing stuff." And I think that's a good point. It's just like drawing her up as a fully realized character. And, you know, she likes karaoke. We didn't know that. She's great at mechanical bull riding. We didn't know that for sure. She's still a bad driver. Yeah. All of the other things, but, she also really likes this one song that goes like all tomorrow's only just a day away. That's kind of like an 80s hit song or something. I don't know what you guys thought of that, but I digress.
Yeah, you mean the song from Annie? Tomorrow, tomorrow, it's only a day away?
It's not actually the song from Annie, though, right? It just has similar lyrics.
I don't know. I think we need to get some lawyers on the phone.
I would have guessed that it's a Hey Arnold original song, but I might need to Google in the background of recording here.
I'm just teasing. It's definitely not the song for Annie.
Unless. No, I think, I mean, we learned that Miriam can do stuff is like a weirdly apt way of summarizing this episode. And we talk about her arc and it's like she has a steeper climb than she maybe, quote unquote, needed to. Like, thinking back to the beginning of this episode, Helga choosing to tell, like, to share with her entire class that, like, yeah, my mom is the worst. She's a junk person. Like, choosing to, like, bring that information, that context out of the home and into an open space. I just couldn't. I felt so rotten even just watching that. It's humiliating, even though Miriam is maybe like an impossible person to humiliate, just because of who she is. But just like it, in a weird way, that does set a set of stakes, right? Like it just knocks her down a little bit more. There's more of, as a viewer, an onus. The onus falls on Miriam to, you know, wow us, you know, razzle dazzle. And, you know, hey, loves karaoke, rides mechanical bulls, bad at driving. Yeah, maybe she really is from South Dakota, isn't she? Just kidding. Any of our listeners from South Dakota, I've never been to South Dakota. I can't speak to that. I just thought it'd be
because nobody's ever been to South Dakota.
Oh, boy.
The Black Hills? Mount Rushmore? Get out of here. That might be North Dakota. I really have no idea.
Fun reminder, if you're listening to this, leave us good ratings and reviews wherever you buy your podcast from. Our podcast is free, so if that plays into your consideration of what you want to give us ratings wise, shout it to our friends from South Dakota. I'm sure you're out there. Sorry to derail us. Any other
thoughts? Would it be important from anybody? Why would it be important for people from South Dakota that our podcast is free, Cody? Are you suggesting that there may be some economic turmoil occurring?
No, that's for anybody listening, just as an edge for everybody. You know, times are tough. We're not monetizing this. We want to make it easily accessible for anybody, whether they're from South Dakota, North Dakota, etc.
Because it seems to me that you might be suggesting that if they had money, they might live somewhere other than South Dakota. But you're alleging that that's not what you were saying.
Correct. Valiant attempt at putting words in my mouth, but that was indeed not what I was saying. Thank you very much. This is A+ content, and that run will continue with whatever Emily has to say. I'm sure of it.
Oh, man. I was going to ask if anyone has any memorable road trip moments, such as seeing your mom win a mechanical bull race or anything just like fun that you've done on a road trip. Shout out to South Dakota, I guess.
Shout out to South Dakota. I don't know why this was the first one that I thought of. I was driving from Minnesota down to Texas for a sports tournament. And I was riding with a teammate and their parents. And we just made a day of hanging out in Oklahoma City and just bopping around different like wine bars and like craft breweries. And just a good, solid, honest time. Not the most fantastic time I've ever had on a trip or anything, but just as far as like a capital R, capital T road trip, just and truly like without a plan, just like, well, let's see what OKC has to offer. Just a lot of Thunder merchandise, because that's their lone sports franchise, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and just a lot of craft breweries and wine bars. And boy, did we have fun. So everybody stepped up. It wasn't, you know, necessarily, you know, mom or dad was the MVP. We all kind of took turns wearing that hat. It was just a good wholesome time.
Yeah. It was just a random sports tournament. It was nothing specific or embarrassing or nerdy or anything like that. I'm sure.
Yeah, none of the above.
The tournament was just sports. It was just, there was so many different sports. Sports,
right. And guess what, y'all? Cody won because of course he did.
Hell yeah. Heck yeah.
Also,
tell us where.
To Cody saying that there wasn't an MVP that night, yeah, sure. It was you, Cody, but okay. Let's be modest, I guess, on the pod.
Our family would take a lot of road trips, actually, as when we were kids. Like, as our whole family, our grandpa had, like, a big van that we would take, like, I think we road trip to Florida more than 1 year in a row, the entire family. And for those who don't know, I have four sisters, so it's, like, a family of seven of us in the car. And I remember, because first it was just my dad and me and my oldest sister, we would just, like, go down there, and then my mom and my younger sisters, when they were little, would fly down or whatever. And so we would take, like, pictures in every state that, you know, oh, it's our first time in, I don't know, whatever, Kentucky, or I don't know. It was fun for that. But they had a TV in the van, right? Like, but it was like a CRT. It was an old van, right? It had a CRT, but it was, like, built into the facade of the van so that we could watch movies during the road trip. And also, it had component cable input so we could plug in, like, the N64 or the GameCube. So we were playing a lot of Mario Party during the road trip. Like, it was a constant thing. And the thing is, something was going on with the cables. And so, like, every once in a while, it would go into what we called olden days mode. And we were like, oh, no, it's going into olden days mode. And what happened was, like, we don't know if the cable got bumped, jumbled when we were going over a bump. But, like, the TV would go black and white. And then it would also start to have, like, scan lines, you know, that you could see. But we didn't know how to fix it. So we were just like, all right, like, it's part of the gameplay. It's too bad that it's olden days mode for your turn. Or anyway, olden days mode.
I didn't know that it was possible to play consoles in cars using today's technology. That blows my mind. That would have changed my life as a child. I did not ever play console. I played a ton of Game Boy on road trips. We used to go to my grandparents all the time, multiple times a year. That was only a 4-hour drive, so it's not really a road trip. But we used to watch a lot of movies on the little things you would strap to the back. Probably my favorite road trip memory is one that I took with my grandparents in Arizona, and I had never been to Arizona before. And I think we drove to the Grand Canyon, and then we drove to Sonoma, and we drove to some other places. And there was, like, a really great variety of road, right? Where, like, we did some of the mountain driving where it takes you an hour to get, like, 2 square miles because of how much the road winds. And we went down into the desert and we saw the canyons, and, like, it was kind of like the first time I had ever been anywhere, really, like, anywhere that wasn't in the American Midwest. And I was just so, like, stunned by the fact that the world looked like that. Cause, like, I had seen it in movies and stuff, right? But, like, that it like really changed my whole perspective on, like, life, right? Like, when I came back to Minnesota afterward, I saw Minnesota differently, right? So it makes a lot of sense that this episode takes place on a road trip, because road trips have that way of sort of, like, unsettling your preconceived notions, right? So, like, it's putting Helga in the place where she can sort of see her mom transform and bring it back with her. So yeah, that was a really good road trip for me, I guess. Although I think Charlie made me watch Twilight at one point during it, and I had already seen Twilight like 3 times.
Oh yeah.
Which is maybe too many times to see Twilight, but yeah, it's a fine. That first one's a fine film. Fine film.
A classic film in some people's
first
eyes.
First one's great.
Especially the way that everything is green the entire movie. But yeah, my road trip memory too is similar to yours, Harry, just when my friends and I went to Denver and Boulder. So I had never been to Colorado, and just, like, the first time driving in, like, we were driving to our campsite and seeing the giant, beautiful mountains for the first time, having just been in, I don't know, the Midwest or gone to, like, New York or wherever, random cities. So it's like seeing a beautiful landscape like that, just the majestic mountains and everything, was very a memorable, exciting moment on a road trip. But yeah, I thanks for sharing all those nice little road trip stories.
Yeah, great. You know, you love learning more about your friends, each other, yourself. Ooh, think about that. Any other lingering thoughts before we close this one out? Any shout outs? Anything y'all want to get off your chest?
Yeah, Wankyland. How many times should I say it? Should I say it one more time? Wankyland. you can't not think about it when you see this episode. They named the theme park Wankyland. That's four times. I just can't get off the mic now.
Also, shout outs to Francesca Marie Smith's unbelievable deadpan line reading of that, where she's like, oh, but Helica, we have a map. Just open up the glove box. And she opens up the glove box and she goes, Mom, this is a map of Wankyland. And just the contempt that she says in her voice, it really, really spoke to me. Yes, Wankyland, a very great moment in a great episode, I think. Wankyland.
The guys really gravitated towards that moment in the watch party. Yeah, a good moment for the adults that would have walked in and out of the room when the kids had the show on. We see you, writers, and it's not getting past us. I would say that my shout out would go to Big Guy Restaurant. That was the name of the bar that they were at. And I also don't think I actually mentioned the cool animation Drew pointed out at the in the watch party, which was the mirror in that bar. They like animated a full bar mirror that was like the length of the bar. So you see all the characters moving in and out and like the mechanical bull in the background, and they didn't have to do that, but they did, and that was very cool. I think the animation throughout this whole episode, it just sparkles and shines. It's so great.
Agreed. Sparkles and shines, just like one special guest, Drew Tenenbaum. Drew, thank you so much again for being here with us today.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah. Tell us, where can people find you? Is there anything you would like to plug? You know, anything that, you know, like a product potentially that you helped put into the world that has been recently released that we've probably already plugged on social media, just as a hypothetical, anything that you want to put out into the void?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Ash Coolbro, and also on YouTube. It's the same name. I make like music mashups. I think the last one I released was like 3 months ago, but sometimes I release a lot at once. You never know what you might see. So find me there. I also make indie games. That's Drewby's Games on itch.io. I have a bunch of different indie games there. But I think recently, I think just today, day of recording, not day of release, you can buy the game that Harry and I and Harry's sister Charlie designed called Decorum. It is a board game that you can purchase on the Floodgate Games website or at your local board game retailer, apparently. It should be in retail right now. Harry, you're spared from talking about it because I plugged it already.
Yes.
And also, I'm just so happy to be back on. It was really fun. Yeah. You might see me again, or I might never show up on this podcast ever again. Listener, stay tuned.
Yeah. And hey, to honor Drew's theoretical memory, to theoretically honor Drew's memory, you should go ahead and pick up Decorum. Everybody here has played it. It's a good bit of fun. But until that time comes, thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Defness, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narvison. You can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
There's no way I'm going to beat the sign out that Drew does. I love, that's one of my favorite parts of every Drew episode, is that when we introduce him, it's like he just won Miss America. He's like, oh, wow, thank you. Just the best. So thank you so much for your energy, Drew. Always makes the episode so much more fun. I've been on Twitter. I am on Twitter. I can't get away from Twitter. It's my life now. And you can find me at Shiitake Harry.
Drew, always great to have you on. Drew. Everyone should buy and play Decorum. Not even theoretically, but in real life. It's a real thing and it's amazing. And I suppose I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Wankyland. Thank you.
also didn't even have time to shout out Arnold knowing how to do math at the end. Like, he saved the day because he knows math.
Be a math, and, yeah.
And Gerald and Arnold were with the pigeons at one point. That was like,
Gerald was in that episode for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much.
He's just
happening.
He's gotta talk to his boy.
Also, I haven't thought about the episode where Binky eats the green chip in probably 5 years.
Dude, like, I was so glad you brought that up, because as a kid who had that specific experience because I was little and insane, that was like a formative episode for me. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, like, I've eaten the green potato chip before. Yeah.
The difference is Grandpa doesn't like decide to be like femme as a result of the curse. And that's just really a shame. It's really a shame.